The Supreme Court on Friday weighing in on a matter that hits home for survivors of domestic abuse, trying to answer the question, can I get a personal protection order that will go so far as to disarm the person that is threatening me? By 8-1, with one dissenting voice, that of Justice Clarence Thomas, the Supreme Court said, yes, you can. There are some nuances here. We want to get into it with a gentleman that I have relied on for every year I've been on the air here in Detroit, and that is Bill Cusick. He's a retired Oakland County Sheriff's Deputy, also owner of Action Impact Gun Range and Firearms, a practicing attorney who fly specs these decisions as closely as anybody. Bill, good morning.
Good morning, guy. How are you doing, friend?
I'm good, thank you. So delighted that we can connect on this. So there's kind of two buckets I want to get into here this morning. If I am an abused spouse, if I am maybe the dad of an abused spouse and I want to protect my son or daughter from someone that is a gun owner that is threatening them, am I safer this morning? Do I have more tools at my disposal to protect them?
Well, I'm going to have to say, I'm going to take the father out of play. I don't know if he has standing to file for a personal protection.
No, but you and I both know there's a lot of very concerned moms and dads out there.
There certainly are, right. So I'm going to say, well, kind of yes and no, because I think we've always believed and we've always treated it as such that you do have that protection if you file for a personal protection order or some type of restraining order. But we always thought that since, I think, 94 at least, that the person under that's accused in that personal protection order can't own a gun. And then here a couple of months ago, a court decided that they could, so that's why the Supreme Court then heard this case. And I think the Supreme Court actually reaffirmed what we all thought was the case anyway. That's how I looked at this, right?
Good.
And I kind of thought, well, it's almost ridiculous to think that somebody who is subject to a restraining order could in fact possess a gun. I thought that'd be a crazy thought.
So I'm not necessarily safer, but the courts didn't make me less safe.
Correct. You're just as safe as you had been because we thought that, right? So they didn't. I think they just reaffirm what we all thought was the case anyway.
So, Bill, how do you balance Second Amendment rights with the public safety concerns in a case like this?
Listen, I think, you know, we do have those rights, but I also think we can't take them to the extreme here, right? So who would think that, this guy was the poster child for who shouldn't have a gun.
Right, that's the problem with this case.
Right.
Yeah, so then I had to wonder, I go, well, was this case intentionally chosen to be reviewed by the Supreme Court so that they could reach this decision? Because when you look at this defendant, you have to conclude he shouldn't have a gun. Right, you can't go any other way if you have any common sense whatsoever. So to answer your question, how do you weigh him? I don't think my rights aren't infringed. Yours aren't either. Now, if you end up being a credible threat to another person, well, then that person gets a restraining order. You shouldn't have a gun. I mean, I think it's that simple, and I actually think it's kind of valid, to be honest with you.
What about frivolous complaints, though, Bill?
Right, because these restraining orders, they can be subjective, right?
And there was no conviction here. This guy wasn't convicted of domestic abuse.
Because he took a plea deal.
As bad as he was.
Yeah, he took a plea deal to take the federal charge, so he only caught 6 years. That's why he did that. And then after the Bruin decision by the Supreme Court, they go, whoa, maybe I can even get out of this one. That's how this came about. I just see it as pretty much common sense. These are people that shouldn't have guns. So you ask about that hearing. You know, presumably there shouldn't be any frivolous findings. There should be fact finding before a judge or a tribunal, and they should do their job and they should be impartial and reach what is considered to be a solid decision. Mm-hmm. Right. I think we do that for everything that goes before our courts. We're trusting our judges to do their job. So can somebody make a frivolous accusation? Sure, they could. It happens all the time. I've seen it repeatedly. But then we also presume that at a court hearing, those kind of get filtered out. Now, I do predict that there will be probably more domestic violence trials, right? And it's just keep in mind here in Michigan, on your first case of domestic violence, you're 99% certain you're taking a, what's called a 769-4A plea, which means you go for a year without another one, and they're going to dismiss it as if it never happened. So for first-time offenders, there's always been an out, has been since I've been practicing. And the only ones convicted of domestic violence itself, they're on a second charge.
Right.
But domestic violence itself isn't enough. You're going to need that restraining order, which you can get without a domestic violence conviction, I might add.
Right. Justin Clarence Thomas, he authored the Bruin decision, was a dissenter here. But a lot of the other justices are saying, you know, we can't go to history for everything because there weren't these types of weapons between relationships.
Plus, domestic violence was looked at very differently.
Yeah, back then. It was okay then.
Yeah, so I think Justice Thomas wants there to have been an identical type of law.
I think we just lost Bill.
Did we lose him?
Did that call drop? Well, yes.
Well, again, it's tough to find this in history, you know, going way back, because they did not have the guns that we do now.
That's right.
Bill, are you there? So, yeah, Thomas says, no, there has to be something explicit. There has to be something that is specific saying in the law, and he claimed that it wasn't there. The other seven justices says there doesn't have to be. In fact, it was Justice Roberts that said, but the principle existed, and it existed in English common law. And am I right about that, Bill?
Yeah, you are. I think what he's saying is there has to be something in the ballpark of that law. It doesn't have to be identical. You're not going to find anything that's going to be exact, but it has to be in the ballpark, which if we're talking 200 years later, I don't think anything's going to be identical.
It's been very interesting. Amy Coney Barrett has pushed back hard on this, and she kind of, I mean, did an in-your-face number on an opinion, a concurring opinion.
Yeah, they all wrote their own opinion.
Against Justice Thomas, saying, slow your roll here on trying to find specific examples, because they're not going to exist. We've had 250 years of evolution here.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I think you're going to really see it play out, because I think this is more of a guide for judges moving forward. So let's look at the Hunter Biden case, right? So now are we going to have to find some correlation between being addicted to drugs and then being a risk to somebody else, right? If you can tie that in, or they're going to have to analyze that. Was there any law existing a few hundred years ago that said people with an addiction to a controlled substance should not own a firearm?
Right.
You're going to have a hard time looking for that one, right?
Right,
right.
Yeah. So I think moving forward, you know, lower court judges are going to have to look and say, well, can I make this connection here? And then, of course, that would be appealed. And so now we're going to take this on a case-by-case basis for the remaining laws that are restricting people's guns possession. I don't know.
Yeah, there was an interesting phrase that Justice Thomas used. He says, we can't have the law trapped in amber. In other words, we don't have to have a prehistoric reference to make this work. We need something a little bit more reasonable.
Bill, how might this ruling affect, let's say, daily operations of gun ranges and firearms businesses like yours? I mean, especially regarding the customer background checks and legal compliance. Is there going to be any changes?
Well, I don't think there will be change. One, don't forget, there's also a restriction when you apply for a firearm that if you've been convicted of a domestic violence, you can't purchase a firearm. That's another one of your restrictions.
Yeah, but the clerk has to punch that into the system, right, so that you know about it?
Not that I know, that the FBI knows about it.
Yeah.
The FBI tells me whether it's there. And then the person answering on the application has to be honest, because if you lie in that application,
we already know what happens
when
you do that.
Is that ever really prosecuted, pal? Mike Bouchard was just saying the other day how frustrated he was that something like 98% of those cases aren't prosecuted.
Well, they're not. The only time you'll see them prosecuted, they're add-on to other criminal charges.
Yeah, yeah.
So the only time I've seen it is on a terrorist charge, right? Somebody was charged with domestic terrorism,
and I think we just lost the call again. And I wanted to ask Bill, just extend my Condolences to him as a
retired community.
As a retired Oakland County deputy and a retired SWAT guy. I know that his heart's heavy today with his former colleagues that are wearing brown in Oakland County. There you are, Bill. I think I hear the noise. Thanks so much for being with us and providing us your insights this morning.
Yeah, thank you for those kind comments, too, by the way. I think that we all have to keep in mind that, you know, you don't want to forget these things in another 3 or 4 days when it's not a hot news topic, right?
That's right.
But that seems to be what happens. So, you know, I'm just going to encourage people to keep it first and foremost for a long time.
Thank you, Bill. And thanks for your time there as well and your thoughtfulness on all these issues. Bill Cusick.
Okay, good day, everybody.
You too. All right, take care at Action Impact. And, yeah, our hearts are heavy today. And, again, we have tweeted out the 501c3 charity that you can donate to, Mission Oakland, to support Brad Reckling's family.